Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us here at Sun Sounds for the Tuesday, June 3rd of the East Valley News. Man, it's already June. I am J.W. Nicholas, your reader for the next half hour, and we'll be looking at some news from the past week in Chandler and Gilbert. So let's get started with our first story from the Chandler Arizonan by Ken Sane, Arizonan Managing Editor. A.J. Chandler Park getting major facelift next year. The current plan for renovating Dr. A.J. Chandler Park in downtown calls for tackling a significant portion of the main plaza in the first phase, with construction starting after the tumbleweed Christmas tree comes down in January. We're looking at doing this in probably 2, 3, or 4 phases, depending upon available funding, said Mickey Oland, the city's community services planning manager. Olin presented the latest designs for the city's Central Park to the Parks and Recreation Commission, which unanimously endorsed the plan. The next step will be for the city council to review and endorse it before they award contracts to start the work. There have been some minor changes since the last time council reviewed plans. The large structures offering the most shade on both sides of Arizona Avenue are now going to be some kind of art element, Olin said. The design team is really focusing on creating a unique, very innovative structure, said John Sefton, City Community Services Director. They're using lighting projection in different areas. They would also be off-center from one another. The design allows the structure on the west side would be slightly more to the north, and the one on the east side a little more to the south. The city in 2017 began reconsidering what the park would become. Kim Moyers, the city's cultural development director, says the designs are only about 60% done at this point, so it will be a few months before the item is added to council's agenda. She confirmed that the hope is to start construction in January. A lot of things out there just outlived their lifespan, Olin said. It's kind of dated, the 1980s, right? What we found out is the bones of the park, if you will, were good. We just need to update and make it more modern. The park was one giant square until 1941, when Arizona Avenue, State Route 87, was built and split the park in half. Today, most of the activity happens on the west side of the park, where the bars and restaurants are mostly located. The east side, in front of mostly office space, is underutilized. The park has been renovated numerous times, most recently in 1985. The latest design has an entry garden at the northeast corner. The current water fountains would be removed. Because of their age, they have become an issue to maintain, Olin said. In its place would be a gathering lawn and a building that could provide storage or maybe a future bathroom. That building, called the North Canopy in the designs, would also offer a small stage area looking south. Just south of that building would be a flex lawn space where people could watch whatever is happening on the stage or use it as play space. Just south of that would be the Market Plaza, where events such as the weekly farmers market could be set up. South of that would be the East Canopy, one of two large shade structures that cross most of that half of the park and would be near the crosswalk to the other half. South of that is a park area that would have some sort of lighting art feature and artificial turf play mounds. Starting on the south end of the west side, a community plaza would be built just north of the current parking lot. We would also have a small building with shade. This would be the area for major events, such as the tumbleweed Christmas tree lighting ceremony. So, the tree would be moving a little south from where it has been erected in recent years. The community plaza would include a sitting area with lots of umbrellas that can be removed when not needed. There are also plans for an interactive water display in the center that can be turned off when needed for major events. Then comes the west canopy, the other half of the large shade structures. The bathroom would be built just north of it. When the council met in 2024, members were told the price tag for doing that much would be $18 million, but the city has only $10 million in the capital improvement plan for it. So the city may not be able to accomplish all those projects in the first phase. The other phases would include the area north of the bathroom on the west side, plus the area east of the Central Park along Commonwealth Avenue. That road would eventually be blocked off to traffic. The large staging area that is behind the Jonathan office building would be expanded with the stage moved to the east end. It is currently located on the north side of that space. The current Commonwealth Avenue would be converted into a pedestrian promenade and event plaza where food trucks could operate. There would also be a children's garden added between the downtown public library, the senior center, and the community center. Sefton said the company they are likely to hire to do the work has experience managing traffic and closures in such a busy destination. Obviously, Willimang did Scottsdale's downtown, Sefton said. This is one of the items that really was part of the discussion in the interview process, having that familiarity with keeping a downtown up and running while getting this construction process accomplished. Willimang did a good job conveying how their strategies and how they will work very closely with the businesses. It's a lot of notification, a lot of communication. And next we stay with the Chandler Arizonan, this time an article by Paul Mareniak, Arizonan executive editor. 1% raise reflects Kyrene's tight new budget. Kyrene School District will be giving all their employees a 1% salary increase as well as a $1,000 retention bonus to full-time workers next school year. If that doesn't seem like a lot with the rising cost of living, district officials couldn't agree more. Administration officials told the Kyrene Governing Board May 13th they could only afford the $1.2 million needed for the salary increase through savings in the current budget. The district's fiscal picture is so challenging, according to Assistant Superintendent Lisa Gibson and Assistant Superintendent and Chief Financial Officer Chris Herman, that Kyrene could not even afford to add that $1,000 one-time stipend to employees' regular wages. We recognize a 1% increase for the upcoming school year does not fully reflect the dedication and hard work of our staff, Gibson said before the board approved the wage hike and stipend. But it represents the most we can offer at this time, she said. If by chance we receive additional money from the state, in the summer our meet and confer groups will reconvene to determine how to apply money to salary schedules. Herman noted that chance plays a big role in any prospect for additional money from the state since the legislature and Governor Katie Hobbs have barely begun budget talks as the June 30th deadline looms for a 2025-26 spending plan. Kyrene has set June 24th for preliminary approval of next year's budget, with a hearing and final adoption on July 8th. We still don't have a budget passed by the state, and they've recessed, Herman said, and it's not likely that it's going to happen anytime soon. But we can't wait, he continued. We always like to have employees be notified of their compensation before the school year ends. As for the stipend, he said, those really are year-to-year decisions, and there's really no guarantee that the stipend would continue next year or any year in the future. The $2.4 million funding for next year's $1,000 stipend, aimed at keeping good employees from leaving for other districts or other jobs, was made possible largely because Kyrene had not filled all the positions it theoretically should have, he said. Thus, the stipend becomes a small bonus for many employees who must shoulder the additional work results from the unfilled job slots. We certainly hope we can hire for those positions, Herman said, but in order to invest money for a stipend for next year, that really comes from our expected underspending or vacancy savings. He stressed there's no guarantee that that's going to be sustainable. His PowerPoint underscored that statement by noting the $1,000 stipend cannot be put into permanent compensation increases because it is not sustainable. For a beginning teacher, Gibson said the 1% salary hike brings their annual pay up to $50,436.50. Teachers could make an additional $5,100 a year through performance pay and a teaching and learning stipend that's not part of their base pay. Gibson noted a few employees at the bottom of Kyrene's complex step system for all district workers' pay will be barely making a dollar more than Arizona's minimum wage as a result of the increase. In giving an overview of Kyrene's fiscal plight, one shared by most of its neighboring districts in one form or another, Herman noted, "There are dozens of factors that go into preparing a balanced budget each year, but there are sometimes some big areas that impact our budget. One of the things we're going to be faced with next year is we've had some pretty significant increases in our utility costs, both in water and electricity, that we're going to have to absorb next year in the budget, and that's a very big number. Utility costs will add $1.5 million in operating costs to the 2025-26 budget, which also must absorb a $4.2 million reduction in per-pupil state funding as the result of Kyrene's enrollment loss. The district expects to receive the maximum $1.8 million in a state-funded inflation payment," he said, "which is intended to cover every cost increase the district might have, whether that be compensation, utility cost increases, and other tracks as well. That money doesn't go very far," he said, "and so we try to maximize what we can by reducing expenses to offset the enrollment changes that we have." While Kyrene expects some additional revenue as well as profits from its community education tuition, he continued, the district could still not find any more money than the $1.2 million it found to raise employees' pay. Delia Litting, president of the Kyrene Education Association, which represents teachers in salary talks, told the board her team was aware of the budget situation Kyrene finds itself in. She noted the superintendent's cabinet visited all 25 district schools to address employees, and that as a result, I'm hoping employees have a deeper understanding of the budget crisis we find ourselves in. Having said that, we are disappointed in a 1% compensation increase, Litting continued. While we understand it, it is a hard thing to take back to educators who pull themselves into the classrooms every day. We're looking forward to being called back, and should compensation become available after the budget passes with the legislators. She thanked the district for its transparency and their diligence in finding compensation sources in the forms of stipends, and we, along with the district leadership, wish that there was more for educators, but again, we understand and we are looking forward to coming back and talking about future compensation packages. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your reader, J.W. Nicholas, and we're looking at news of the past week from Chandler and Gilbert. As a quick reminder, if you missed any part of this program or others you may enjoy here on Sun Sounds, you can access all of them anytime, on demand, on our website at www.sunsounds.org. Find them under Broadcast Info and Audio. And now we look at our last article, this one also from the Chandler Arizonan, and this by Ken Sane, Arizonan Managing Editor. Free parking getting squeezed in downtown Chandler. Very recently, most residents could find free and abundant parking in downtown. That is changing. More businesses are starting to turn their parking lots into paid ones. And with parking already at a premium and new developments on the way, free and abundant parking may be more difficult to find. Terry Kimball, president and CEO of the Chandler Chamber of Commerce, said these businesses aren't trying to make money. They're just trying to ensure their customers have parking, especially west of Arizona Avenue. With the continued growth downtown has experienced with the completion of the Boston Street improvements, DC Heights apartment building, and Maple House coffee shop, we've seen an increase in vehicles parked throughout the neighborhood area, said Cultural Development Director Kim Moyers. Moyers has $634,000 in her capital improvement project for next year to construct a parking lot and entrance to the Oregon Street garage. The city purchased vacant land on California Street for that purpose. When it designed the Oregon Street parking garage, the city planned on eventually adding an entrance from the west, Moyers said. FLO Yoga and Cycle on Fry Road is expected to be the first to turn its parking lot into a paid venture. The owners said they had little choice because of the popularity of the shops at the corner of Arizona Avenue and Fry Road. Patrons were parking in their lot to go to Black Rock Coffee and other businesses, leaving no spaces for FLO customers. Now, more lots like that are showing up downtown, with Soho 63 Event Center on Boston Street the latest to convert to a paid parking lot. All the paid lots so far are on private property. The city does not charge for use of its garages. The city has three public garages downtown: Overstreet, Oregon Street, and City Hall. There are two others with limited access. The parking garage on Boston at Washington Street is tied to the Alexander Office Building, and the one behind it on Buffalo Street is tied to the Jonathan. They are unavailable during regular business hours, but available to the public otherwise. Moyer said the city wants to turn the two vacant lots it owns on California Street into a paved parking lot to add more parking specifically to the western half of downtown. It would also add the entrance to the Oregon Street garage from that parking lot. It will include safety, lighting, and perimeter walls to the neighbors on both the north and south side of the lot, Moyer said. Mayor Kevin Hartke said he's not sold on the need for a parking lot and not sure it will help. I realized the thought on this was to alleviate the neighbors' concerns of people parking in front of them, Hartke said. I'm not convinced that people still having to walk two blocks next to the parking garage is any different than walking to the parking garage. Councilman Matt Orlando asked if downtown is seeing an increase in overnight parking. Moyer said no. The parking that we've experienced is directly because of the migration, she said. If you go to Maple House and sit for any given time, you see cars being parked and people are walking blocks to get to it. There is more traffic coming to the area west of Arizona Avenue. Construction has started on expanding the Hilton Garden Inn at Oregon and Chicago, right next to the Oregon Street Garage. In addition, the DC Heights apartment building will enter a second phase, with more units being added behind the current building, and the city has approved the Chandler Food Hall for the corner of Chicago and California. And now we move along to the Gilbert Sun News, with an article by GSN News staff. Gilbert man sues prosecutors after charges dropped. One of the co-defendants in the criminal case against former Higley Unified Superintendent Denise Birdwell is suing the state for malicious prosecution after charges against him were dismissed. Gilbert resident Stephen Nielsen earlier this month filed suit against the state offices of Auditor General and Attorney General, as well as the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. The suit alleges the sham investigation and prosecution were designed with one goal in mind: to force Nielsen and co-defendant Gary Aller out of business as a warning to others involved in the financing of public projects in Arizona using private investment. Birdwell, Nielsen, and Aller were accused by former Attorney General Mark Brnovich of a variety of charges related to the construction of the school district's two middle schools. At the time the district was considering the two schools' construction, HUSD was near its borrowing limit, so it came up with a plan to lease the buildings and eventually own them. The district has been making annual lease payments for over a decade and has about over $120 million outstanding until 2053. The total estimated payment by the district for the entirety of the lease is over $178 million, according to Higley CFO Tyler Moore. Nielsen's suit said the state and county wanted to make an example out of him and Aller to score political points and to undermine the use of public-private partnership funding to build public schools. He was charged in 2021 with three counts of fraud and conspiracy. Within months of being falsely charged with procurement fraud in connection with two middle schools, Nielsen's business was destroyed, the suit continues. His partners on multiple projects across the country refused to do business with him and distanced themselves. Local governments and developers backed out of pending projects. Nielsen, a career public servant before starting his own business, lost out on tens of millions of dollars just as the state and county intended. But Nielsen never did anything illegal. He was advised by sophisticated counsel and followed Arizona law to the letter in seeking funding for the two schools at issue in his criminal case. In attempting to railroad Nielsen with a malicious criminal prosecution, the Auditor General and Attorney General charged Nielsen with violating laws that did not exist at the time of the project. After their first indictment was dismissed on this basis, they then reversed their story and contradicted their own representations made in seeking the first indictment, in hopes of keeping their misguided campaign against Nielsen and Aller alive. While a prosecutor for Brnovich's successor, Attorney General Chris Mays, recognized that there was no probable cause to prosecute Nielsen for anything and dropped the charges this month, this was too little too late, the suit contends. Nielsen's business was irreparably damaged. Instead of enjoying his retirement years, Nielsen is now scrambling to start over after losing his livelihood, spending immense amounts of money defending himself, and being constantly hounded by accusations from neighbors and members of the business community to this day, all a result of the state and county's malicious conduct. Most of the charges were also dropped against Birdwell, who eventually pleaded guilty to some misdemeanor state tax law violations. Joining Nielsen as plaintiffs are P3 Partners, Educational Facilities Development Services, and Cypress Tree Investments. Before co-founding the Educational Facilities Development Services, Nielsen worked for 30 years as Community Development Director for the City of Tempe, and later as Arizona State University's Vice President of University Real Estate. His suit notes that because he became an expert in public-private partnership funding, his company aimed to help public school districts that could not go into the bond market for money to build urgently needed facilities. The suit alleges the state sought to limit such funding arrangements to charter schools at the expense of public districts like Higley that were unable to go into the bond market to raise funding. His suit notes that he and Aller had been approached by Higley in 2012 to use such a funding mechanism for two desperately needed middle schools, and that the Auditor General had signed off on the plan. It has been a long and devastating 4 years, but I am pleased that justice was finally served and these charges have been dismissed, Nielsen said in a release. These false charges cost me and my family, but I am grateful that this painful episode is behind me and I can continue my efforts to help school districts, government facilities, recreation, senior care, and treatment centers in these challenging financial times. And our next article from the Gilbert Sun News comes from Sharanthi Pereira, GSN contributor. Gilbert artist finds beauty all around him. During the dark, troubling days of the pandemic, Gilbert resident Michael Feather sought beauty in his life. He found it by returning to his art in the form of urban sketching. When I was really struggling the most and art came back into my life, it became something where I could actually see beauty again in the world, he said. Feather can sketch a detailed scene, add color with his personalized 13-color paint palette, and complete the picture. His work, 13 Colors Art, makes the viewer stop, appreciate, and savor the moment. A few days each week, Feather chooses public events or spots in his adopted hometown and sets up shop to sketch. Sometimes he goes to Chandler, Mesa, or Tempe, or when he feels more adventurous, he drives further out to Sedona, Pine Top, Flagstaff, or other picturesque Arizona cities. Barbecues, car shows, bookstores, and ice cream shop openings, anything is grist to his mill. Often, he's on commission to create a portrait of people at their wedding or paint the scene of a grand opening of a new business. He has returned to his work after a 25-year hiatus. During COVID-19, Feather focused on sedate buildings and structures, such as the Gilbert Water Tower, the Mesa Arts Center, and the Chandler High School. Then, as the population gradually came out of the pandemic, he recentered to figurative work with people and their activity. What is the process of his visual storytelling? I go and I set up in the view that I think is going to be the most appropriate, and I'll kind of look at what I'm going to draw and try to figure out what is most important to me, he said. Because if I can't say what's exciting or interesting to me, then I'm not going to be communicating that to anybody else. After establishing the starting point, he sketches with a pencil. Sometimes he skips the pencil and begins with ink. I have either a brush pen, which has waterproof ink, or a fountain pen that I will draw out the scene. That can take anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes to an hour and a half or 2 hours, depending on how big the scene is and what I'm trying to do with it, he said. Then he uses his 13-color palette to paint. Sometimes they're more elaborate paintings. Sometimes it's meant to be a quick thing, he said. Feather said he forgets his cares when he's working. What I like in addition to that, is one of the reasons I absolutely love drawing and painting out in public is now the conversations that I get with other people, he said. This is important to him because he normally prefers staying at home working. It's encouraging to hear positive things and to actually engage with people on a topic that's not divisive. And so that for me is really a joy, he said. I'm an introvert by nature, so I don't start a lot of conversations. But because I'm out in public drawing and painting, I get more people coming to me and I get to have all kinds of conversations. He's chatted with kids, seniors in their 90s, bikers off their Harley Davidsons, residents of nursing homes, the whole gamut, who just appreciate seeing something different, he said. As soon as I start painting, that's when it really becomes alive to a lot of people, and then I get into a lot more conversations. So, the 13 colors for me is reminding myself of the meaning and the purpose behind why I create, and ways that I can communicate that and share it with other people, the artist said. Feather and his family, wife Pam, son Cole, and daughter Noelle, moved back to Gilbert in 2019, having previously resided in Santan Valley and Mesa. Earlier, they lived for 6 years in North Carolina. Pam is a librarian at Val Vista Academy and runs the gifted program there, too. Cole is graduating from high school this year, while Noelle hopes to graduate next year. They both attend American Leadership Academy in Gilbert. Feather's family encourages him with his second artistic love as well, writing novels. He has completed a first draft of the first novel in his series in the dark horror genre titled Shade Files, revolving around the Shade family. Feather completed a master's in fine arts degree to hone his writing craft during the years before the pandemic. Then, when he was writing in the dark horror genre, his father passed. So that was part of what was going on in my life, he said. There were a lot of things that I was just really having a hard time seeing positive. And so, as a result, I'm trying to get some of that out of me. And so the novel is kind of a reflection of the darkness that I saw overtaking me, he said. Both painting and writing help him see light and continue to see beauty in life. I'm hoping that we'll start to see more and more creatives who are stepping out and just doing work that they love and bringing good things into the world, he said. That's what I'm trying to do now. I see the difference in myself as a result. For more details, you can visit 13colorsart.com. Thank you for joining me this afternoon for the East Valley News for Chandler and Gilbert. A quick reminder that you can always find us on any of your connected devices, streaming via our Sun Sounds of Arizona mobile app, available for Apple and Android phones and tablets. Once again, I'm your volunteer reader, J.W. Nicholas. Please stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.